Ananda. All glories to some of the devotees, all glories to some of the devotees, all glories to some of the devotees, all glories to the Sri Gauranga, Jai Prabhupada.
Those who are listening online, we are trying to fix the internet. YouTube is not working, so bear with us. It's beyond our control.
Oh, okay. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much to Sandipani Muni for a beautiful kirtan this morning and filling in for me. Everyone knows my talents, so, but I thought we'd showcase somebody else here. I'm notorious for being pretty bad at kirtan. Okay, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 6, Text 46, which is the last verse in Purushukta confirmed. Okay. Pradanyato yan risham amananti. Avataran Purusha Shabhumna Apiyatam Karna Kishaya Shoshan Anukramishyeta Iman Supeshan Dharanyato Yan Rishi Amananti Avataran Purusha Shabhumna Apiyatam Karna Kishaya Shoshan Anukramishyetan Imani Peshan Pradhanyato Yam Risha Atmananti Lilavataran Purushasya Bhumna Apiyatam Karna Kishaya Shoshan Anukramishyeta Imani Stupeshan
Shaitan.
Vaishnavis. Pradhanyata, chiefly, yan, all those, Padishi, O Narada, Amananti, worship, Lila, pastimes, Avataran, incarnations, Purushasya, of the personality of Godhead, Bhumna, the Supreme, Apiyatam, in order to be relished by you, Karna, ears, Kishaya, foul matter, Shoshan, that which evaporates, Anukramishye, shall state one after another, Te, they, Iman, as they are in my heart. Supeshan, all pleasing to hear. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. O Narada, now I shall state one after another the transcendental incarnations of the Lord known as Lila avatars. Hearing of their activities counteracts all foul matters accumulated in the ear. These pastimes are pleasing to hear and are to be relished. Therefore, they are in my heart. Purport. As it was said in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam 158, one cannot be fully satisfied by hearing unless and until one is given a chance to hear of the transcendental activities of the Lord. So Brahmaji is also trying in this verse to stress the importance of narrating the transcendental pastimes of the Lord as he comes and manifests himself here on the surface of the material planets. Every living entity has a tendency to hear pleasing messages, and as such, almost every one of us is inclined to hear news and talks broadcast by the radio stations. But the difficulty is that no one is satisfied at heart by hearing all those messages. The cause of such dissatisfaction is the incompatibility of the message with the innermost stratum of the living soul. This transcendental literature is especially prepared by Srila Vyasadeva to give the utmost satisfaction to the people in general by narration of the activities of the Lord as instructed by Sri Narada Muni to Srila Vyasadeva. Such activities of the Lord are principally of two varieties. One concerns the mundane manifestation of the material creative force, and the other deals with his pastimes in the form of different incarnations in terms of time and place. There are innumerable incarnations of the Lord like the waves of the river flowing constantly in and out. Less intelligent persons take more interest in the creative forces of the Lord in the material world. And being disconnected from the relationship of the Lord, they put forward many theories of the creation in the name of scientific research. The devotees of the Lord, however, know well how the creative forces work concurrently by the action and reaction of the material energy of the Lord. Therefore, they take more interest in the transcendental activities of the Lord as he incarnates himself on the surface of this material world. Srimad Bhagavatam is the history of such activities of the world, and people who take interest in hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam clear their hearts of the accumulated mundane filth. There are 1,001 rash literatures on the markets, but one who has taken interest in the Srimad Bhagavatam loses all interest in such filthy literature. Sri Brahmaji is thus attempting to narrate the principal incarnations of the Lord so that they may be drunk by Narada as transcendental nectar. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the second canto, sixth chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Purusha Shukta Confirmed. So, when I was reading this verse in purport, it reminded me of something from the Bhaktisiddhanta that I read recently, and after a long time trying to find it, found it that Jiva Goswami, of course, the Bhaktisiddhanta describes Abhideya, which is the practice of bhakti, the process, sadhana bhakti, and beyond. And there's a section on hearing. And he talks about hearing the name, the form, the qualities, and the pastimes of the Lord. And then there's in the section on the pastimes, about hearing these pastimes, there's several pages including this verse. Now, in this purport, Srila Prabhupada has just brilliantly, he's captured all of these points. He's taken about 8 pages of Jiva Goswami, put it into a few paragraphs here, and made it very, very accessible, easy to read and understand. I have to be honest, it takes me 2 or 3 times reading something from Jiva Goswami to understand it. Well, I don't know how well I understand it. But Prabhupada makes it so clear, so accessible. So this is just a wonderful purport. So the main points that were here and that Jiva wrote about in this verse and purport is that Vyasadeva is not satisfied after writing the Vedas. And so the Narada instructed him to write the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then Prabhupada talks about the difference between mundane and spiritual literature. And then we find that these Leela pastimes are the most relishable of all of Krishna's various pastimes. And the devotees favor those, and particularly favor the Vrindavan pastimes of Krishna. So those are the things we want to talk about today. Now this verse, as you probably are seeing, is sort of a transitional verse. We've had several chapters, right, of the Purusha Sukta and how the Lord expands in this material world, how he uses his different energies, and how he can be seen by all aspects of the material world. And so we spent a long time talking about that and the value of that and how we can see, you know, Krishna within the material elements and how they all work. But now we are going into a different type of Leela, a different aspect, which is Krishna's Leela incarnations or avatars in this material world. And those are, of course, very relishable for the devotees. We'll talk about that. So Vyasadeva instructed Narada about the necessity to write specifically about the pastimes of Krishna. And that same message, of course, from Narada, at first was heard from Brahma. Lord Brahma is now telling Narada this. These many, several chapters here are all discussion between Narada Muni hearing instruction from Lord Brahma, who, of course, is his father and is the first in the line of our Brahma Sampradaya. So then Narada Muni's son is the next in line. He then instructed Vyasadeva, and Vyasadeva wrote all and compiled all of the Vedic literatures. And so when in the Bhagavatam, when we go to this verse 158 that Srila Prabhupada notes here, it says, Sri Narada said to Vyas, you have not actually broadcast the sublime and spotless glories of the personality of Godhead. That philosophy which does not satisfy the transcendental senses of the Lord is considered worthless. And there's more description how Vyasadeva compiled all the Vedas, the Upanishads, I think most of the Puranas, all the Itihasas, histories, so many different things were there. But Narada was complaining that it's good, but you haven't quite got the most important essence. And that's, you know, bhakti to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his, you know, beautiful form as Krishna. So then he says at the end of it, he says on, I think it's text 13, on the other hand, that literature was full of description of the transcendental glories of the name, form, fame, pastimes of the unlimited Supreme Lord. It's a different creation, full of transcendental words directed toward bringing about a revolution in the impious lives of this world's misdirected civilization. Since transcendental literatures, even though imperfectly composed, are heard, sung, and accepted by purified men who are thoroughly honest. I remember this verse always because when I was, of course, a young man and back in the early 70s joining Krishna Consciousness Movement, going through the 60s, you know, I really like this part about, you know, a revolution, creating a spiritual revolution, because we were, you know, some of us were a little inclined in that way. But this was the actual essence, a spiritual revolution which is first within the hearts of all of us, then expands to creating change in the greater civilization, the greater culture. And that's what Prabhupada always wanted to do, to actually change the entire civilization, this misdirected, misguided civilization. But first it had to come from each of us changing individually in our hearts. Now it's interesting because here it says, even if these literatures are imperfectly composed, now I don't think anyone's ever accused Vyasadeva of imperfectly composing literatures. But it's interesting that said there, and probably kind of picked up on that in his purports. And he very humbly said, I'm sure that I'm very deficient in writing. I'm trying to write in a foreign language to me. He says, well, there will be so many mistakes. But he was confident, he says, that the message will be received. And it's which it is, which it was. People read Prabhupada's and write in a couple grammatical mistakes, or they use a word a little bit differently, sometimes even just the English usage different from the American usage. Still, Prabhupada made devotees. He changed people's hearts. Also, it's interesting that at the very end, I think it's this purport, he thanks Narada Muni for appearing in this chapter. Isn't that interesting? He got divine inspiration writing about this, obviously, from Narada Muni. I mean, he says it very humbly, but that's what you can see. Of course, Prabhupada was always divinely inspired. One time a devotee saw him reading his books, and Prabhupada said, oh, you read your own books. And Prabhupada said, these are not my books. Krishna is writing these books. So we can understand the heart of a very advanced devotee. Krishna is giving that inspiration, if not even specifically dictating those books. So we can see all of these books and the writings of the Acharyas, the Goswamis, and Srila Prabhupada as being on the same level, spiritually on the same level as the Bhagavatam. In fact, it's described in the Bhagavatam how when Shukadeva Goswami recited the Bhagavatam, it became even sweeter. Vyasadeva wrote, you know, from his own internal purification, his own internal rasa, his inspiration and bhakti came through as well. You know, so every time a great devotee repeats the message, it becomes sweeter and sweeter is the idea. So Prabhupada talks quite a bit, and he just talks about this in many purports, the inadequacy of the mundane literature, mundane sound. He talks about the radio. Of course, I don't think people listen to the radio very much anymore, but obviously television, video, I mean, we could put in so many other things now, Facebook, internet, you know, whatever it might be, YouTube. And we can think about, hey, come on, you all do it, we know. But we know the inadequacy of the mundane literature and sound does not satisfy the soul. Now, of course, we should insert here that many devotees use electronic media, use social media, use the internet very, very nicely for preaching Krishna consciousness. You know, Manaram was telling me once about Krishna.com that they get, I forget what it was, 2 or 3 million unique, not repeated people, unique hits, you know, that go onto the website every year. So, I mean, there's this tremendous power there, and Prabhupada, I think, would love it. Because just like Bhaktisiddhanta said, you know, that the books were the Brihat Mridanga, the Great Mridanga, you know, because they could the sound could travel so much more to everybody in the same way. There's so many ways of increasing the sound vibration of the Hare Krishna mantra. Yeah. So Prabhupada says the cause of such dissatisfaction from all of this mundane communication is the incompatibility of the message with the innermost stratum of the living soul. Isn't that a beautiful, that's just a beautiful phrase. Incompatible message. In other words, it jars us at a very, very deep level. The soul is not satisfied. You know, the material aspects, the mind, the intelligence, the false ego, may even be a little bit satisfied for a little while. But for a devotee, it's not at all satisfying. It's very temporary, and then it's kind of like, okay, what's next, you know? That's the way it is. That's the difference in chanting. Everyone tires of movies, songs, books, show, whatever it might be. There's a satiation effect. Okay, I've heard that. I want to, you know, like, oh, like someone said, you want to, you know, I've already seen that. I already heard that. I don't want to really hear it again. But the Hare Krishna mantra has been the number one hit for Vaishnavas for thousands of years. Eternally, right? And as we saw in 2 days of this wonderful festival of the Holy Name, other than a couple beginning and ending mantras, it was mostly just the Hare Krishna mantra, right? Hours and hours and hours of the Hare Krishna mantra. Now, I didn't see anyone looking bored, you know, or anybody thinking, oh, okay, well, you know. It's three names, and we never tire of it. I saw one person who, once we took my mother-in-law, who was quite old, my wife's mother, to a Rathyatra. Yeah, she was a good sport. She'd go along with whatever we were doing pretty much, so that was to her credit. And we had to go somewhere, but she was old, you know, so we sat her down in a chair next to where the festival, the kirtan was going on stage, and we had to go somewhere. We came back about half an hour, we said, you okay, how was it? And she says, well, he says, it was entertaining enough, but, you know, it's the same song over and over and over. Okay, well, her heart got purified even if she didn't know it. So if she heard long enough, she'd finally say, I'm getting to like that, I'm sure. Anyway, but that's the difference between spiritual and material sound. For most of us, yeah, the spiritual sound just enlivens the soul. In Bhagavatam 4:30-20, it says, always engaging in activities of devotional service, devotees feel ever increasingly fresh and new in all their activities. The all-knower, the super soul within the heart of the devotee, makes everything increasingly fresh. So the super soul, of course, is in everyone's heart, every living entity, and it's described in Bhagavad Gita how it directs the wanderings of all living entities. I mean, even, you know, Prabhupada explains even what we call instinct in animals is the super soul. How does a duck or winnie bird know how to fly south in the winter? You say, well, they're following the other ones, but how did the first one? In other words, ultimately, you come back, you can't really explain it just by some, you know, material concept. You know, and we see this with animals and other things, and Prabhupada said, some of it is learned behavior. He said, but a lot of it is just the super soul guiding and directing. So the super soul is guiding and directing every living entity, but he guides and directs the devotee more specifically. More specifically, he guides us towards him, towards his lotus feet. And here it's saying the super soul within our heart makes everything increasingly fresh. That's the power of bhakti within the heart of the devotee. Prabhupada said there's really nothing for the highly advanced devotee that is uninspiring. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says he's situated in everyone's heart and that he helps the living entity forget and remember. By the grace of the Lord, the devotee gets inspiration. Srila Jiva Goswami in this connection says, the super soul, the plenary expansion of the personality of Godhead, exists in everyone's heart, but in the heart of the devotee, he reveals himself as ever increasingly new. Being inspired by him, the devotee experiences increased transcendental bliss in the execution of devotional service. And then Prabhupada says, as our chanting is increased, it comes out new and fresh. So it's almost like if it doesn't feel new and fresh, do it more. And it gets better, right? Okay. So, next point, very important point here, and this, I said, is our transition from several chapters of the Purusha incarnations to now the Leela avatars, Leela incarnations. And the pastimes of Krishna's Leela are the most interesting to the devotees and most relishable. They're always pleasing, Lord Brahma is saying that they're always pleasing and relished. And he says, these pastimes are in my heart. Right? Lord Brahma is carrying these pastimes in his heart. And of course, we know, as the first living being at the beginning of creation, Krishna, after he did tapasya, meditated for thousands of years, Krishna appeared in his heart. And he revealed everything to him. Of course, we have the four chatur shlokas, which are the essence of the Bhagavatam, as the Bhagavatam expands from those four first verses given to Brahma. But he also, as we know from Brahma Samhita, showed Lord Brahma the entire spiritual world. We have probably, I'd say probably, I mean, I know there's probably other literatures I'm not familiar with, but as far as I've seen, that's about the most complete example or complete expression or understanding description of Goloka Vrindavan, right? Anywhere. I mean, he describes the entire spiritual wonder and beauty and grandeur and bliss and of Goloka Vrindavan. And that's from being inspired within the heart. So, Prabhupada says in the purport today, devotees of the Lord, however, know well how the creative forces work concurrently by the action and reaction of the material energy of the Lord. Therefore, they take more interest in the transcendental activities of the Lord as he incarnates himself on the surface of this material world. So, yeah, we appreciate the Purusha incarnations. We appreciate, you know, how Krishna is creating and, you know, doing all of these wonderful activities. But more relishable are actually his activities in his different incarnations, his Leela. So Jiva Goswami says, there are two types of pastimes. Those describing actions like creation of the universe, that's what we've been reading, and those describing the activities of the Leela avatars. Then he says, the second type is superior. Of course, we can't say this action and that action of Krishna, one is better, one is, I mean, they're all absolute, right? They're all perfect. But to the devotee, why would we say the second type is superior? Just that it's more relishable. It's more enjoyable. It's something that we, you know, that we love to see Krishna's incarnations and all the wonderful things he does. And devotees are very attracted to different incarnations. Some devotees are attracted to, you know, Lord Ram. Some are attracted to Nrisingadev. I mean, who can't be attracted to all these, right? So, basically, there are three types of Krishna's incarnations, three types of his lila. There's the Aishwarya, the Audurya, and the Madhurya. I know Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati speaks about these in the Chaitanya Bhagavat in towards the beginning, but also I couldn't really find that one in the database, so I found this is a little description by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Jivadharma. It says, the Supreme Lord eternally manifests his two spiritual moods simultaneously, Aishwarya, unlimited majesty and opulence, and Madhurya, the transcendental beauty and amorous sweetness. In this Aishwarya manifestation, he is Sri Narayan, Lord of the Vaikuntha planets, and in Sri Krishna, he's the embodiment of the highest perfection of Madhurya. Okay, he says, in terms of philosophy, Narayan and Krishna are not different. Yet, in the consideration of transcendental rasa, Sri Krishna is the source and repository of all such rasa, and as such, he is therefore the highest and most relishable amongst all spiritual truths. The scriptures abound in verses describing his attractiveness. So the devotees particularly relish Krishna's pastimes of all the avatars, actually, of all the lilas in our line in the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. We see our acharyas and obviously speak mostly about Vrindavan lila as, you know, the most attractive. I mean, that's generally what, I mean, most of us are attracted to. We always have Radha Krishna deities in most of our temples. Obviously, Gaurini Thai, Krishna Balaram, well, Krishna Balaram is part of Vrindavan Lila, all very attractive. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is sort of special. That's Audarya Lila. That's the mercy, the magnanimous aspect of Krishna. And we wouldn't be here without that. I don't know where we would be, swimming in the material ocean, the pool somewhere, without Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu coming and giving his mercy. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is obviously very connected with that sweetness, with the Madhurya rasa, because he came in the mood of Radharani. And he actually came to give us Krishna Prema. So that's how we have to understand. And I was reading somewhere, I think it was Raghunatha Swami, and he said that, you know, we worship Lord Chaitanya as Krishna. We don't see the difference. I mean, obviously different in form, you know, but as far as Lord Chaitanya, Krishna, right? Don't we even say Lord Chaitanya is not actually an avatar in the same sense of others, that he is actually Krishna directly himself in the mood of Radharani? Okay. This is interesting, kind of confirming this. In a purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 6.12.22, this is about Vritasura. You think, well, what does Vritasura have to do with Vrindavan Lila? Well, I'm not sure, but in Prabhupada's purport, somehow he was inspired to go there. Prabhupada says, he's quoting the verse, says, I don't want the facilities of happiness at Brahmaloka, Svargaloka, or even Dhruvaloka, not to speak of this earth or lower planets. I simply want to return home back to Godhead. That's Vritasura's desire. And Prabhupada says, this is the determination of a pure devotee. A pure devotee never is attracted to any exalted position within this material world. He simply wants to associate with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, like the inhabitants of Vrindavan, Srimati Radharani, the gopis, Krishna's father and mother, Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, Krishna's friends and Krishna's servants. He wants to associate with Krishna's atmosphere of Vrindavan's beauty. These are the highest ambitions of a devotee of Krishna. Okay. And it goes on like this. So there's great value for the devotees who are attracted to Krishna or attracted to any of the lila avatars, perhaps we could say, in hearing and chanting of Krishna's pastimes. And that is what we're doing. So now Lord Brahma is going to describe all the pastimes of the lila avatars in the upcoming chapters. In 10.1.16, right at the beginning, of course, of the 10th canto, it says, similarly, when one asks questions about the pastimes and characteristics of Lord Vasudeva Krishna, three varieties of men are purified: the speaker or preacher, he who inquires, and the people in general who listen. Now, that's very important because it's funny because when I was going to come to class today, I said, probably nobody will be there because everyone's exhausted, you know, from the holy name and the Sunday feast, and probably everyone came to see here Bhaktivedanta Swami last night. So I said, there probably won't be anyone here. So thank you all for coming. But so, of course, my wife says, well, then, you speak to the walls. Because that's what Prabhupada said. If no one's there, you speak to the wall. Because it's described that, actually, Deva Goswami was explaining that if there's, you know, if there's a speaker, you listen. If there's a listener, you speak. If there's no one there, you hear and chant yourself. Right? You know, you can read, you can chant, you're both hearing and speak, you know, you're hearing and chanting simultaneously. So, never a loss. Okay. I have some more verses, but I'm running short on time. So we feel the ecstasy of continually hearing about Krishna. Well, I say we should. Advanced devotees feel the ecstasy of continually hearing about Krishna. In the Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma, who we're hearing from today, says, I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is Shama Sundar, Krishna himself, with inconceivable, innumerable attributes, whom the poor, pure devotees see in their heart of hearts, and with the eye of devotion tinged with a salve of love. So advanced devotees experience Krishna within hearing the pastimes. For a very advanced devotee, the pastimes come alive to them. And actually, in remembering, I was reading a little book by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and he was saying what an important aspect of sadhana yoga, especially at the Raghunuga stage, is remembering. After hearing and chanting comes remembering. And he said that remembering, the best remembering is to remember the pastimes of Krishna. It's not always so easy because Jiva Goswami says basically, usually we remember the name, we remember the form, we remember the pastimes is last, there are four of them. The form, qualities. Well, you all are good. Okay, yeah, the let's try again. First of all, the name, the form, qualities, and then so the pastimes are last. So in other words, it's not so easy to just always be thinking of Krishna's pastimes. I mean, honestly, you know, it takes a little effort, but it's worth it. It's very, very worth it because when one continues to chant very sincerely and deeply, those pastimes, you remember them. They start becoming alive within you. And it's just, it's very, very wonderful when you're able to do that. And so, but often we don't always feel so much attraction for hearing and chanting. But Krishna consciousness is a practice. And we practice it by following sadhana bhakti and the rules and regulations on the order of the spiritual master. But we don't do it unthinkingly. Maharaj last night was speaking about that very nicely, about not just being unthinking, and that we have these anartas. And it's not that we just say, okay, I have anartas, too bad, you know. No, we have to work on them. We have to consciously try to see them, be a little introspective, you know, and how these anartas are blocking our going forward, our Krishna consciousness. So being a little introspective is good. And we have to think about our advancement, and we evaluate our progress, and we adjust the process of bhakti accordingly. Now, we don't adjust the practice. I mean, we don't adjust the process. We adjust our practice of the process. So there's no need to create anything new. It's all there. It's all given to us. It's really fairly simple. Our minds complicate the whole process a lot. It's very simple because most problems that we have, they're usually, well, they can be with their body, they're often with their mind, our senses. But when we're not really following these prescribed processes very carefully and very enthusiastically with determination. And so often, if we're having difficulty in Krishna consciousness, we simply need to intensify our hearing and chanting. Now the problem sometimes is, and I realize that, is when you're not too enthusiastic, then it's difficult, you don't feel like hearing and chanting more. But it's almost like, you know, sometimes you have to, like, they say, you know, just take the first step, just, you know, you just have to dive in, you have to just try, despite your mind, which I always like when Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj says that you should, what was it, beat your mind with shoes in the morning and brooms in the evening, or one or the other. Yeah, beating the mind, because the mind can be our best friend or our worst enemy. And often in our more neophyte stage, it can be our enemy. So we have to really disregard the mind a lot. And that's hard to do, because we really tend to identify with our subtle body. Maharaj was talking about that, this deep connection we have, you know, with especially with ahankara, you know, with our false ego, right? It's very deep. I mean, sometimes we think, oh, I'm a devotee, I know I'm not my body, but, you know, do we really know and practice that we're not our body when there are difficulties that come to the body and the mind and the intelligence and the ego? Yeah. At any rate, but we can develop this taste. There's another very simple way that all of our literatures, Vaishnava literatures, tell us, is by hearing from pure devotees. When you hear Bhagavatam from a pure devotee, some taste arises almost automatically. I mean, it's almost, you don't really have to work at it too much. And association with pure devotees is very, very powerful, and we develop that taste through, you know, associating hearing from pure devotees. Jiva Goswami in the Bhaktisiddhanta quotes Bhagavatam 1.2.16, "O twice-born sages, by serving those devotees who are completely free of all vice, great service is done. By such service, one gains affinity for hearing the message of Vasudeva." That means, by serving devotees, one gains a taste for hearing about Krishna. So then, gaining affinity means I'm gaining some taste, I'm gaining some appreciation, some attraction. Okay. His purport, Jiva Goswami says, "Generally, taste develops by association with great devotees. By serving great devotees, taste for the Lord's topics develop. Meeting these devotees, one develops faith in worshiping the Lord, and then a desire to hear. From hearing, taste develops. Hearing from great devotees has immediate effect." And of course, we are so fortunate every day and throughout our days or whatever, we can hear the Srimad Bhagavatam from a great devotee like Srila Prabhupada. You know, we're very, very fortunate. Because, you know, one could just read and say, well, how can I associate with pure devotees, great devotees? Well, other than the pure devotees are in this room and all of you. You know, there's one story where someone asked Prabhupada, how many pure devotees are there in the world? And he turned to his secretary and says, how many initiated devotees do we have? And he said, like 2,000. Prabhupada said, oh, about 2,000. So, now that's one definition of a pure devotee, and I don't think most of us take that, you know, so seriously as far as it applies to ourselves, except for the fact that we are actually following, if we're following Prabhupada, we're following pure devotional service. We're following the practice. Therefore, in that sense, we're pure devotees, but we have, of course, a long way to go, clearing out all these impurities, as the verse says, these foul things in the heart, you know, to really be what we would probably consider a pure devotee, as Prabhupada was. So, he quotes 325.25, "In the association of pure devotees, discussion of the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very pleasing, satisfying to the ear and heart. By cultivating such knowledge, one gradually becomes advanced on the path of liberation, and therefore he is freed and his attraction becomes fixed. Then real devotion and devotional service begin." Now, of course, our acharyas explain how the series of verses in 325, you know, go through the different stages, you know, the eight stages of bhakti up to prema, but that's another class. I don't want to get into that too much. Okay, so Srila Prabhupada says, "The process of advancing in Krishna consciousness and devotional service is described here. The first point is that one must seek the association of persons who are Krishna conscious and who engage in devotional service. Without such association, one cannot make advancement. One must give up the association of materialistic persons and seek the association of devotees, because without the association of devotees, one cannot understand the activities of the Lord." So, hearing should be from pure devotees, and one may even begin hearing and chanting, but only the association of pure devotional service is purifying and leads to development of taste or ruchi. So, Bhagavad Gita 34 says, "One should engage oneself in the practice of yoga with determination, nischayena, and faith, and not deviate from the path. One should abandon, without exception, all material desires born of mental speculation, and thus control all the senses on all sides of the mind." So that's the goal. And again, very difficult to do without the process of bhakti and hearing and association with pure devotees. But basically, Prabhupada says in the purport, he tells the story of the sparrow and the eggs. Remember, sparrow and the eggs with Garuda?
Yeah. The ocean and the eggs.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's right. Okay. The ocean had taken his eggs. I just had a note there, tell the story of the sparrow and the eggs, and I forgot it. You know, that's just old age. What can we do? And anyway, so he wanted to get the eggs back so he was going to dry up the ocean, right? Little sparrow was taking a little beakful by beakful. How in the world? But then Garuda came and helped. And, of course, Garuda is extremely powerful in the ocean, immediately returned the eggs. Okay. So he says, similarly, the practice of yoga, especially bhakti yoga and Krishna consciousness, may appear to be a very difficult job. But if anyone follows the principles with great determination, the Lord will surely help. For God helps those who help themselves. Right? I think that's a Christian expression. It's not, at least it's an English expression. God helps those who help themselves. So in other words, yes, God will help us. Yes, Krishna will be there. Krishna is there for us. Krishna is trying his best to bring us back to him. We have to make a little effort. We have to do something. We have to have some determination in the process. I always thought, how do we become determined? We become determined by being determined. It's kind of an inner quality. You have to develop it and just try to practice it. And in Krishna consciousness, our sadhana, hearing and chanting, does strengthen that determination. So we have to prioritize. Often we have to choose what we are going to do with the hours in our life, the days of our life. And we have the free will of the living entities there. We can always choose Krishna or always choose Maya. And someone was pointing out the other day, like surrendering is not a one-time thing. Okay, I did it. I chose Krishna. It's kind of like day-to-day, minute-to-minute. You know, Maya's always given us choices and Krishna's given us choices. So that's there. And so the devotee should always serve with determination. Bhagavad Gita 9:14 says one should serve with a dhritavrata, a determined vow. So it does take some determination, some attempt. And then when Krishna sees that little attempt, that little determination we have, he gives us so much help. He gives us so much facility. And especially as we continue hearing and chanting as given to us by the pure devotee of Krishna. And if we please the devotees of Krishna, then Krishna is very, very pleased. And then he gives all help to the devotees. Prabhupada once said that if we're doing nice devotional service, Radharani becomes pleased. And then Radharani will recommend us, I think he said, to Krishna. She will say, Krishna, there's this very nice devotee of yours in his service. And of course, anything that Radharani says to Krishna, right, automatically is accepted. Goes, okay, sure, I'll take this devotee, and I will help this devotee and accept this devotee as mine. You know, so the idea is that Krishna is in our hearts, and we want to be in the heart of Krishna. We are in the heart of Krishna, but we often don't realize it. And the process of hearing about Krishna, hearing about his wonderful pastimes, his beautiful pastimes in Vrindavan, help us to remember him, to bring us into our hearts, and realize the goal of life. Okay, I'm going to end with the last verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10. In the end, there's sort of a summary, a little wrap-up of, you know, what's the importance of the Bhagavatam. 49 says, to protect the principles of devotional service to himself, Lord Krishna, the best of the Yadus, accepts the pastime forms that have been glorified here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. One who desires to faithfully serve his lotus feet should hear of the activities he performs in each of these incarnations, activities that suitably imitate those are the forms he assumes. Hearing narrations of these pastimes destroys the reactions of fruitive work. So it's obviously a very powerful process. And the last verse is, by regularly hearing, chanting, and meditating on the beautiful topics of Lord Mukunda. Lord Mukunda is mentioned because he gives liberation. With an ever-increasing sincerity, a mortal being will attain the divine kingdom of the Lord, where the inviolable power of death holds no sway. For this purpose, many persons, including great kings, abandoned their mundane homes and took to the forest. Well, we don't need to take to the forest, fortunately, and in Kali Yuga it's probably not even really recommended, but we can, and even in our homes, we can take up this process of hearing, chanting, and remembering, meditating on the beautiful topics of Lord Mukunda. Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate all your kind attention. Any questions, thoughts?
Ryan?
Oh, okay, well, either way. It's up to you. I'm trying to be impartial here.
Your class was very covered all the bases.
I'm very happy with your class. And it was inspiring, personally. I want to make two points. One is that in the original verse that you were reading, Lord Brahma is speaking, right? Or is it not Brahma?
I'm sorry?
Who is speaking?
Who's speaking?
Lord Brahma.
Lord Brahma.
Okay, so
speaking in Narada.
Yeah. Lord Brahma is saying that the first thing was that hearing these pastimes, qualities, names, and forms purifies the filth in the ear from hearing all kinds of different karma.
Yeah, he says hearing of their activities counteracts all foul matters accumulated in the ear.
But then he says, because I am attracted to these things, therefore they remain in my heart.
Yeah.
So it seems like there's two different steps. Mm. One is that you're actually coming to hear, and you're hearing, and the other is more advanced stage that not only are you hearing,
it's going into the heart.
But it's going into the heart.
Exactly.
So I thought that was very significant.
Yeah, that's a nice point. Yeah.
The other thing is that in every, there's like three different stages of devotion, generally speaking. You know, it's neophyte, madhyam, and uddama. Mm-hmm. That's one way of describing three different spiritual positions.
Yeah.
Even if we're in the neophyte stage, which includes a very vast area, there's three different stages in each one of those stages.
Right.
That's described, I think, by the Dharma and other literature.
Oh, you mean the three stages of sadhana, bhava, and prema, where there's the six processes and two in each one? Yeah.
Yeah, there's three. Neophyte, madhyam, and uddama.
Oh, okay. Kanishta. Yeah. Kanishta, madhyam, and uddama.
So, even if there's a vast area with, let's just say, most devotees are in that stage, the neophytes that are in the lesser stage can also hear and feel some gratefulness to devotees that are in a higher stage. You know, you can't just use the excuse, well, you know, everyone's a neophyte, so I'm just going to stay at home, read these books, and not come to the classes, and not hear many devotees. And also, the more advanced devotees, they realize that the mind is, if I stay separate, my mind, I'm going to hear from my mind. I'm constantly hearing from my mind. So they want to, even if they're a general group of neophyte devotees, they still want to associate with them because their realizations are actually more advanced than what some of the things my mind is coming up with. So he'll also be grateful to all the devotees, even the less developed devotees, that you've given me an opportunity to have your association rather than my mind, which is generally speaking, at least in my mind, a non-devotee. And you know, that's what I found. I mean, you know, during the COVID thing, it was just very, very tough. But now that I'm able to come to the temple with not so much, I can feel so much inspiration from all the devotees.
Yeah, I guess the purport of what you're saying is how important the association is to help us get out of that mental state to some degree, you know, to go along, and that increases our hearing, chanting, and its potency, sort of, in association of devotees. And, very nice. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, thank you, Prabhu. I was thinking, you mentioned the practice of going to the forest and how that doesn't really fit in the modern world, but metaphorically we could use it because we have to disassociate from negative things, around us, and so there's some withdrawal necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that's accomplished by associating with devotees. And I had one question. You mentioned adjusting our practice and not the process.
Our practice. In other words, the process is completely true, perfect, and everything, because the process is given by the acharyas, handed down from Krishna.
Right.
You know, in fact, in the 11th canto, in so many places, you can find even Krishna's direct instructions on bhakti yoga. And, of course, Lord Chaitanya gave his instructions to Rupa Sanatana Goswami. And so, basically, like you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, those are then reflected in their writings, Nectar Devotion, etc. So the process there is given by Krishna. It's perfect. We don't always practice it perfectly. That was the point I was making. So sometimes we have to be introspective and take stock of, am I chanting well? Am I actually reading well? I haven't really read anything for about 3 weeks. that we need to improve on.
Yeah, that was my question, basically. How do we know what adjustments in our practice to make safely? One thing Vaishya Sikh said, he had a list of 10 items to become determined. And one was, just because you can't do everything, don't neglect to do what you can do. Something like that.
Whose point was that?
Vaishya Sikh.
Hmm?
Vaishya Sikh.
Oh, I don't remember that. Okay. If you can't do everything, don't neglect what you can do. Well, of course. That makes perfect sense. In other words, it's always kind of that way. And especially in the beginning, we do what we can do for Krishna. In fact, we even tell people in the very beginning, whatever you like to do, do for Krishna. You know, we don't necessarily have to tell them about restrictions. Just do something positive for Krishna, you know, and then begin your spiritual life. And then as we advance, of course, we learn the different things, the different processes that we should do. You know, but ultimately, of course, as one becomes more advanced, I shouldn't say that. One does not stop the processes. One continues the practice of sadhana bhakti, as we saw Prabhupada, as we saw all the acharyas. We see what's in the prayers to the six swamis. They chanted rounds, apparently, right? I mean, there's one verse that says how they. Anyone know the translation of that verse where it says how they chanted and measured in a measured way? So that means, you know, they're counting their chanting japa like we are, you know. So, but as one advances, one does those activities with more and more natural traction, natural enthusiasm, more taste for them. The motivation becomes more that they're just, that because one out of enjoyment. Ruchi, some taste, it starts to develop. And, that takes some time. For me, for most of us, it takes quite a while, you know, but it's there. It's almost our promise from Krishna and acharyas. If you do this process, you do it with some faith, some determination, you're going to advance, and you're going to appreciate Krishna consciousness more and more, and it's going to become relishable. Yeah? Okay. There's a question up here, too. But you want to get the ladies first? Or? We'll get you.
Because we're talking about relationships. Somebody asked me one time, do you know what rasa you're in? And I had to admit, like if you worship Krishna as a father or as a lover, and I had to admit that I had no idea. Do I have to worry about this? Do I have to question myself about this?
No, I wouldn't worry about it. I think we just think of ourselves first as just das, you know, servant of our spiritual master, servant of Krishna, servant of the devotees, and as we perform, that's vaidhi bhakti, and that's the process. As one advances and becomes purified, those things will become known to you. Now, back in the good old days, I guess, when people had their very advanced, perfect spiritual masters nearby at hand, the spiritual master would help direct them. So I'm not quite sure how that works now, but it is described by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur that process that will be revealed to you within your heart. In other words, if there's not the guru available to tell you what your rasa is at a certain point, when you're ready, you know, when you're at that advanced stage, Krishna will reveal it to you. And I have absolutely no doubt that, you know, if we just patiently follow Srila Prabhupada, follow this practice, everything will become known.
That
right?
That doesn't mean that we are impersonal.
Hmm?
That doesn't mean we are impersonal.
Of course not. We're very personal. We're very personal with our God brothers and God sisters. We're very personal with our guru. Very personal. Even in our relationship with Krishna. You know, people do have certain attractions, and that's okay. Like some people, you know, really love like the Damodar Leela, and that sort of Vatsalya Rasa, and others. Some people are really attracted to Lord Chaitanya and, you know, Gaudiya Leela. And some people are just really attracted to, you know, Radha Krishna. And that's okay. And you can cultivate that, and you can, you know, like many devotees have, like think about when you're in distress, who do you pray to? You know, now, some people pray mostly to Prabhupada or to the Guru. Some people pray to Radharani, to Lord Chaitanya, to Lord Nityananda. You know, that's personal. We're starting to, now I'm not saying that you're eternal rasa. You know, we don't know that, really. As you said, you know, we don't really know that at this point of our devotional service. Yeah, but I'm just responding to what you said. It's not impersonal. Yeah, we experience at least the beginning stages of a personal relationship. And personal relationship means based upon the soul, right? The Atma. You know, not just on material, you know, like sometimes we have friends because we share certain material commonalities with them. They kind of think like us. They like doing things like we do and like that. You know, so I don't know. So maybe, of course, with devotees, maybe that is an eternal relationship. Maybe it's not. You know, we don't really know exactly until we become very purified. Right. Over here, or did we? Where are we? Okay, Prabhu.
You mentioned in the beginning that it was a small crowd here. And Srila Prabhupada said we could preach to the four walls. Mm-hmm. There was an event in London that was advertised, but not many people came. It was a big hall, something like four or five, just a handful of people came. I heard recently that those four people, or four of the small crowd, became devotees and very substantial devotees, actually. And the talk that Srila Prabhupada gave that day became the introduction to Bhagavad Gita. So then you mentioned that Krishna's directing the wanderings of
animals, ants.
Prabhupada says, how does the ant know that there's sugar on the countertop in the kitchen, you know, so many ant miles away?
Yeah. They find it, don't they?
So how is it that, and Krishna's devotees are being given special guidance, right? But then we end up with so many conflicting ideas as devotees, as a community, a worldwide community. So how is that possible that Krishna can be guiding us in apparently different directions?
Well, that is a mystery. I think there's two different aspects of that. One is when the divisions are sort of materially, on the material basis, and some when they are spiritual. Now, Prabhupada said that there are differences even in the spiritual world. I was actually reading one purport where he was talking about, he said there's different camps. You know, there's Chandavallis and Radharanis, he said. But then I read somewhere, Bhaktivinoda said, but they are actually, that's superficial almost. I mean, they're actually sisters, you know. That's the extreme, you know, that's like the example from the very top, you know, of the spiritual hierarchy. But it comes down. And so actually the question was, oh, I know, it was probably in a conversation, was saying when there seems to be differences, don't take them very seriously, you know, because sometimes there are different ideas and different moods. Like, for instance, there might be different ideas of how to best preach, and someone may be attracted a certain way, another person another way. Now, but there's also material conflict and material differences just based upon our bodies. It may be what country I come from. And I tend to be negative towards others from another country, another nationality, or another group. Or it may be I don't like people who look this way, or people who dress this way, devotees, or just and sometimes even the ideas can be very conflicting. So what we have to see is if beyond the conflicts, the external conflicts, is there a deeper connection? I was thinking about this because when I was on the GBC, I dealt with very advanced devotees. Somehow I was fortunate enough to, a lowly person like me, to be able to associate with all these sadhus who are gurus and sannyasis and everything else. And I value that and I appreciate that to this day. And I noticed, but I also, particularly was I was in positions of management, or when I was a director or the executive, whatever. But sometimes I would have conflicts on policy with some of these advanced devotees. I mean, we did not agree. So on substantial issues. And then I realized that after I retired, I've met some of these devotees and we just got along wonderfully. I totally appreciate and valued them as sadhus. And then I saw, and even at the time, because they were rather advanced, we even took those as, we could kind of, what do you say, segment or parcel out, compartmentalize. Okay, we didn't agree on these issues, but we shared, close, spiritual relationship and shared goals. We wanted to please Prabhupada. We all wanted to see the movement grow, right, and do that. So there's a lot of ways to look at it,
I was also wondering if, apparently, according to one of the graphics or painting that was shown during japa, said that Radharani sometimes becomes angry. Mm-hmm. And it's something called M-A-A-N. Ma. To increase Krishna's
pleasure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So is it possible that he could be enjoying this kind of disagreement?
I hope so, because otherwise he could be very unhappy with us too. it kind of depends upon the level that we're doing it and the level that it is. And I mean, sometimes I've seen advanced devotees who had disagreements be able to come together and really understand each other, and they could kind of be either just okay with they disagreed on something, or they would come to some consensus on it. I mean, if there's really fighting where devotees are even offending one another, that Krishna doesn't like. We know that. So in other words, when we have, and I kind of learned this the hard way too, in management, if you do disagree with someone, you have to do it in such a way that you don't create offense. In fact, Prabhupada gave us an example that he was had a very big disagreement with, what was Bhaktisiddhanta's brother's name? Leela? Lee Kumar. Was it Lee? Lee Prashad. Okay, and it was over property, remember? Some of you might have heard the story, and the property that Lalit controlled, he was neglecting somewhere in the Mayapur, somewhere in that area. And Prabhupada once said, we could run it. ISKCON, we have the ability, we have the manpower, we could run it and make it, this nice place you have nicer. And he didn't want to do it. And so Prabhupada, because Lee Kumar was, the brother of his guru, right? Superior position. I mean, position is very important in spiritual life. He's not going to offend, So he showed how to do it. And he said, wouldn't it be true if somebody did this, that would not be a good thing? So in other words, he never accused Lee Kumar of doing anything wrong, but he pointed out in a sort of way like, well, what if somebody did this? Wouldn't that be a bad thing? Wouldn't that be wrong? Wouldn't it be better if someone... And he showed his disciples, they all recorded this, kind of like how to deal with an advanced devotee, obviously, where there was some disagreement. And I think if we do, and if we can always remember that, then it's all right. There doesn't have to be agreement. Probably, like I said, probably there's difference. I was also thinking, I was just reading this recent Krishna book, how Krishna wanted to make Rukmini angry, remember? Krishna saying to Rukmini, actually, you know, I don't know why you married me. You know, nobody even knows what caste I am. Am I Kshatriya? Am I Vaishya? I'm this. That. You had such great choices. You could have picked Shishupal. You could have picked this one. You could have picked... And he just wanted to get her angry, kind of like, you know, to increase the pleasure of the relationship. But she did she went the opposite. She just got mortified. She became so upset. But, oh, no, I can't stand it. What if Krishna left me? You know, she couldn't stand the thought of being separate from Krishna. Finally, Krishna kind of said, okay, I didn't really mean it that way. I just wanted to see you angry. And then she ends up just preaching this wonderful philosophy afterwards. She says, oh, that's what I really wanted to see, you know, that... You know, that she, you know, she really explained everything about material attachment, about spiritual. I mean, you know, it's a really nice little section. You know, it's interesting how some of the different personalities in Krishna's Leela, they get little sections where they just all of a sudden become philosophers and preachers. I mean, there's some sections where, you know, Balaram starts talking about the difference between the body and the spirit, like, and all of, you know, all the different characters. So it's characters, personalities, you know. So it's it's quite nice. Okay, I'm keeping everybody way over time. Any last? Okay, thank you so much. Hare Krishna.